Jason, thank you so much for joining.
Awesome,
I had a good time, bro.
I did too.
Thank
you,
man.
This is a good conversation.
Thank you.
You have a power to create a future that wasn't going to exist. All you got to do is take action, right?
Wow. Over the course of the first few years, you started doing some affiliate marketing work, started doing some SEO work in the online poker. The lawyers were like, yo, we will pay you a lot of money if you do this for us. And now all of a sudden you're like, well, I can turn this into an agency. And so if God gave you the blessing and the opportunity to live through that financial success, and this is honestly, I don't think I've ever publicly said this, but I'll say it now. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CEO Lawyer Podcast. I'm your host, Ali Awad, the CEO Lawyer. And today, we are with the king of digital, also known as Jason Hennessy, CEO of Hennessy Digital. I'm sure so many other companies, and we're going to get into all of that. But before we do, Jason, I want you to introduce yourself. And I know you have at least one book out and another one that's already out too. So tell people where they can find that. And then we're going to talk about business and all sorts of cool
stuff. Thank you. I'm honored to be here. We're in San Diego at TBI Med Legal doing this live. My name is Jason Hennessy, as Ali has said. I've been doing digital marketing since 2001. So over 20 years now. Been in legal marketing since 2008. Wrote a book called Law Firm SEO, which you can buy on Amazon. And I just wrote my second book called Honest SEO as well. So I've been busy, to say the least.
And you have a pretty big organization, right? Like, how many employees do you have at Hennessy Digital?
We're about 140, I'd say, employees right now.
And how many of them are U.S.-based?
U.S. is probably 90, maybe,
wow,
I'd say.
So still heavy on the U.S.-based.
We are. Yep.
Because it's a highly technical company, you need experienced people working. And I know you were talking to me the other day, and you said, man, we ended up recruiting, like, the top SEO strategist at Disney World.
Yes.
They ended up coming to your company,
right?
So, honestly, I kind of want to know, apart from the business building, why did you decide to go and recruit some of this top talent and pay them so much? Because you're paying, like, well into the six figures for some of these people.
Yeah, we have to go out and find the best talent, and the best talent is not on the market, right?
You got to poach them.
Yeah, so that's the key, is you're just not going to put in, you know, an ad and get people to, you know, so you have to go out and actually find the talent and then pay for the talent. And so that's all part of the strategy. So if you're listening to this, you know, what is the biggest piece of the business that is so important to building, you know, relationships, customers? Like, zoom in there and go out and recruit the best talent.
Obviously, a basic HR setup where you're posting stuff on Indeed and trying to recruit talent, that's for people that are looking for jobs or looking for a switch. People that are happy in their positions and making good money and in a good city and their family is happy, like, it's hard to convince those people to switch.
Yeah.
How much of recruiting of top-level talent involves the likability of the CEO and the cultural fit versus just the money?
Oh, it's so important, right? You know, because that's really what in some cases is attracting that. In fact, that's what happened with this person from Disney. He was a friend of mine for many years on Facebook, conference circuit, this and that, right? And so when Disney was, after the pandemic, they were basically bringing people back to the offices.
Yeah.
And he got used to that virtual office.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to go back to the office. And so therefore, perfect opportunity. I posted an ad. I was starting to kind of, like, look for talent, and he saw it and raised his hand, and we kind of made the deal happen. So that's extremely important, right? And, you know, and I think people want to work at a organization that where the not only you have a good leader, right, but the leader has an amazing vision for the company too, right?
Did you have to give up any sort of equity or rev share deal with this guy?
No, I didn't. So I'm 100% owner of my company, but people do have, you know, bonuses and structure, and, you know, there's employees, then there's key retains, right? And so, you know, typically when we set up our business, you know, my director of people success, when we hired her, she came in and she audited everything, and she's like, we got to make sure that everybody is at a 50 percentile as far as salary, right? We ordered a Culpepper report and we looked at and benchmarked it. It's called Culpepper.
Culpepper?
Yeah.
Okay. And that's just to gauge the industry.
It's a couple
average.
$1,000s and they show you what everybody should be making based on the market rates and stuff like that. And so there was people that were like a little higher and there's people lower, right? And so we actually made sure that everybody was at least at 50%, right? And then you look at like who are your rock stars in your company, right? And those are the people that you want to handcuff to the business. And so
that's
those
the golden
people,
handcuffs principle.
Yeah.
So those are the people. Explain some golden handcuffs for us.
That's it, right?
Let's do it.
So those are the people you want to handcuff to the business. And how do you handcuff people? Is you you obviously make sure that they're being paid more, right? And so those people you try to get into the 70 percentile, right? And then there's some people that are like, you know, the super important components of the business. And, you know, obviously, you know, in some cases they're paid higher than the market rate. Like if you want to recruit somebody from a different company to come over to you,
yeah,
right? Because again, they're not actively looking for a job.
So outside of salary and good culture, what are some other strategies you can use to create a golden handcuff?
Yeah.
For team members to stay on board.
Yeah, so we give 5 weeks of PTO right from the start, right? So you don't have to earn that. We have a 401k match with 4%. We've got amazing benefits. We do a week where people can actually go out and donate time to their community in addition to the 5 weeks of PTO.
Okay.
We've got something called Random Act of Kindness Week, where we actually do things within the community, right? So that's just it, and we're very, we're very transparent. You can see all about our company if you read our blog. It's not just fluff. It's actually like our voice. It's who we are. It's what we do. It's the conferences that we attend, and I think that's really important. Is like on your blog, if you're a business, people are reading it, not just customers, but people that you might be recruiting to your business. And so you have to be cautious of that.
At this point in your career, with, I'm sure, a multi-8-figure business, 140 mm-hmm. plus people, national presence, mm-hmm. if you had to pick one in terms of where you are the strongest expert, would it be as an SEO engineer mm-hmm. or as a business person?
Good question. I think
at this point in your career,
yeah,
I'm not talking about in the first days because obviously we know the answer to that.
Yeah, you
but
know,
at this point in your career.
Yeah. So it's funny. So like when I first started out, like I was an SEO, right? You know, I was not a CEO,
yeah.
right? And that was my passion. That's how you do. You start your business based on a passion, right? You know, and then eventually you have to start to transition and you start doing a lot of other things. And eventually, like I had to become the CEO,
yeah.
right? And so I think, and it wasn't easy to transition, right, because you're so passionate about it. But if you're so passionate about SEO, you're not growing the business and you're not doing the things that a good CEO is doing. And so therefore, you have to find the right talent. You've got to be able to trust them and delegate the work to them. And then me, I focus more now on being a good leader, right, and being the face of the company and doing things like this. Which became more of my new passion,
yeah.
right? And so it wasn't easy, right? You know, I'm a member of Vistage. I'm a member of YPO, right? These are organizations.
Yeah.
And so I surround myself with other leaders that have also made that transition, right? They all started their business based on, you know, a passion, and now they're all doing things that are different and trying to be better CEOs and leaders. And I've got a business coach, you know, that holds me accountable to getting better as well. So
you didn't answer the question.
So the answer is, you know, I think I'm a better CEO today than an SEO, just because I don't have all the time in the world to keep up with the algorithm like I was doing back when I was in my 20s.
So. You know, and it's interesting because I was just having this conversation before we started the podcast, and with one of my team members, mm-hmm. and the question came up, what keeps businesses from growing so much? Mm-hmm. Like, what is that next level to get you to succeed from 6 to 7 or 7 to 8 or 8 to 9 figures?
Mm-hmm.
And I started with a super complex answer, like very convoluted, like all these reasons. And then I finally just simplified it and said, the reason your business doesn't grow mm-hmm. is because you lack the necessary skill,
the experience
to grow your business.
That's right. Yep.
And so what does that mean? Mm-hmm. You might be an expert as an attorney or mm-hmm. as an SEO specialist or as a doctor, as an accountant.
Good luck scaling
it. But you lack the skill of hiring.
Yeah, scaling.
You lack the skill of marketing. You mm-hmm. lack the skill of setting SOPs and operations.
Yep.
And so all that falls under the umbrella of scaling. And then there's different problems that one employee, five employee, 10, 20, 50, mm-hmm. every time your business doubles, the systems break. And so mm-hmm. depending on where you're at in your business, like if I get a question from someone that's just starting their business mm-hmm. and they say, you know, what's the thing that keeps people from growing? My answer to you based on your current setup mm-hmm. is you need sales. You need to just advertise yourself religiously and bring as many customers as possible.
Yeah.
If you're already doing seven figures, you're like, how do I get to eight? I'm going to tell you, well,
different answer.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. What's going on with your team members?
That's
do
right.
you have some leaders developed? If you're at eight figures and you're trying to scale past that, multi-eight, it's like, well, what does your leadership team look like? And have you created a middle management so also your leaders don't have so many people that are reporting to them?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I would agree that at this point in my career, I've become a better CEO than I've become than a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get to this point without having understood at least the fundamentals of being a great lawyer, understanding personal injury,
for sure.
the nuances, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So I want to talk about complementary businesses.
Okay, yeah.
There's this myth that, you know, once you start making money and, you know, it's like you need to have seven different streams of income to become a millionaire.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, did you have seven streams of income when you became a millionaire?
I don't know if I had seven. I figured out what my core competency was in, you know, in life, and I just leveraged that, right?
What was your core competency?
So my core competency was obviously what my passion was digital marketing and SEO, right? So it started out doing, affiliate marketing back in the day, right? Then from there, I spoke on stage at a legal marketing summit where there was like 50 DUI lawyers that were in a room. And I basically had no clue about, this was 2008, no clue about legal marketing. I just got up there and taught them how I was able to rank on Google for like keywords like online poker, online casino, things like that. Like really competitive stuff, even more competitive than legal, right?
Wow.
And so then by the time I got off stage, you know, I had like seven lawyers. I said, that was amazing. Like, do you do this like as consulting? And I'm like, not really, but give me a card. And so I ended up leaving there with like seven clients that was now an agency, right? And so now I had some affiliate marketing and now I was starting an agency and I was doing consulting, you know, and I was really sacrificing a lot of my time for money, right? Because I was investing so much time. You know, and from there then, you know, so now I've got an agency and I've got that model and then I'm like, well, let me build some websites that I could then lease out in a couple years to lawyers, right? So I started building out some of my own properties where I build a website as though I'm a lawyer and I do everything that I do so well for my clients, right? But it's for my own website, which then will become a virtual asset, right? And so I've got some of those. So people invest in the stock market. I was investing in this basically web virtual assets, really, right? It's like I'm building houses. And eventually they become hotels.
It's like digital real estate.
Yeah. And so
just so people understand what's happening here is, so Jason like started the SEO business over 20 years ago.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And over the course of the first few years, you started doing some affiliate marketing work, started doing some SEO work in the online poker industry, very, very competitive businesses, and you were ranking high. Mm-hmm. And then you went to a legal marketing conference, and the lawyers were like, yo, we will pay you a lot of money if you do this for us. And now all of a sudden, you're like, well, I can turn this into an agency.
Mm-hmm.
But then, what was there a shift where you said, I'm not going to do anything except for just law firm marketing?
There was, you know, I think, and it wasn't like intentional, right? It's just, there was so much business coming in because I was starting to become a thought leader and I had a case study and I would leverage
what
that case study.
What year?
So this was 2008.
Wow.
Right. So 2008.
The year I graduated high school.
Is that right? Yeah. So 2008, I'm like doing marketing and SEO was a lot easier back then. And so I was able to rank a website in a major market for like, you know, DUI lawyer, right? And so then it became really easy because then I would show up at conferences like this and meet other people and I'd be like, oh, you work with this person? Yeah. Oh, great. And can you show me what you do for? And then basically other people just wanted to be like this lawyer, right? And so you just leverage that. And next thing you know, the really hard part though is, you know, is scaling it, right? And so you got to be able to hire other people and train them to do what you do, right? And then put systems and processes in place. And I wasn't really good at that. And I made a lot of mistakes and stuff, right? You know, and the other part of business, though, which is really interesting, is that when you start a business, the talent that you can hire is only the talent that you could afford.
Yeah.
Right? And so
until you learn how to make a lot of money, you won't afford great.
That's
talent.
Right. And so that's why most small businesses go out of business.
That's why they fail. Yes.
It seriously is, right? Because you don't have a lot of money. You're trying to pay your mortgage, and at the same time, you're trying to scale and you're trying to train people. But you could only afford like people like in college as interns or out of college, right? And so therefore, these people don't have the experience to get you to the next level, right? And so that's a challenge. But once you can actually break through that, you know, and actually you can get to a point where you can actually afford. And the problem is you've already made mistakes because now you have an ego and you're giving out titles to people too during this time, right? Yeah. So you got somebody that just graduated college and you're like, you're going to be my director of marketing.
You're
going to be my VP of sales and this and that, right? And that all comes back to haunt you because, you know, they don't deserve those titles, right? They're not really capable of like holding those titles, right?
Oh, and God, this is such a good topic. I'm so glad you brought it up.
So like, you know, so now you have to like work your way out of this, right? Because eventually you really need, like you need to hire like a real director of marketing, but yet you already have a VP of marketing. It's like, oh, what am I doing, right? And so, you know, anyway, once you start to break through these things, but it's funny because like the, you know, the lessons that you learned, right, so many years ago, like just like now you are a ninja, right?
Yeah.
You know, because of all the experience and all the failures, like my motto is fail forward, right? You know, be thankful for your failures. Because I like to say even my clients, like when a client signs up with us as an agency, the benefit that they get is 20 years of failure. That's
yeah.
really, you're actually starting, you know, with
way
you know,
ahead of
a head start. Yeah. So I truly value my failures.
So just so we don't lose track of like the conversation, first, at what point did you feel like, hey, I should just go all in on legal and law firm SEO and kind of forget everything else?
Yeah, so that was 2008.
Okay.
And again, there was so much business, there was so much blue ocean, right, that I didn't have to go into other industries.
You just saw that the opportunity in this industry was big enough and
That's
it was
right.
worth you dedicating the next 10, 15, 20 years to it.
That's exactly right, yeah.
And so the next thing was, okay, now you got these 7 clients, you start working for them,
mm-hmm.
You start obviously building your reputation, becoming a thought leader,
yep.
and you started hiring some folks based off of, you know,
your budgets.
Your budget, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you were speaking to ad agency owners, digital marketing agencies, and they're kind of in a similar boat where you were in 2008,
yeah.
where they got some clients, they do a good job. They're actually good at their specific niche of whether it's running YouTube ads or doing SEO or any sort of digital marketing.
Yeah.
But they want to try to scale the business.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you learned in those first primary years that you're like, man, if I would have just done this a little bit differently, it probably would have saved me 5 years of
yeah.
time.
So I would have probably gotten a coach a lot earlier.
Okay.
Yeah, so I didn't get my first executive coach until we were at about $5 million in revenue. And he helped us get to $10 million pretty quickly, right? But I would have probably liked to get a coach, you know, you coach people, right? You know,
yeah, that's the crazy thing. Like, I don't
right?
have a coach.
Yeah.
But so, I should probably get one.
But you are a coach, right? And you think about it, like, everybody has coaches, right? Like in all throughout our life, we've had coaches, right? You've had a soccer coach, you've had a baseball coach, you've had, right? You know, and you know, but why is it once you get to like become like a business leader or CEO, you stop, right? And it makes a lot of sense because yeah, what happens
for me, it's because of ego. Like if I'm being completely honest,
okay.
I had 7 different businesses before I became an attorney,
mm-hmm.
and I honestly feel like I'm a natural, phenomenal salesperson and businessman,
mm-hmm.
and I don't really need a coach. And the other reason is because I've never met another law firm owner that's had the the growth trajectory that I've experienced.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you haven't had the same success as I've had in my business,
yeah,
I don't feel like I should be listening to you.
Yeah, well.
Right, as an attorney.
But
there are people that are on the opposite end of that, where they're like, yo, we're already doing 50 or 100 million in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, I really just felt like the technology and the social media aspect of my business was so unique and different. It was a disruptive technology.
Yeah.
And all the information that I was getting was old school advice.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, you should stick to a phone number. You should get an office.
True.
You should meet people in person. Never send a digital contract. Never let someone work from home. It's the end of the world.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I when COVID hit, I had like 6 or 7 employees.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're at like 60 plus. And it's within a couple of years. And if I didn't build my business to be virtual,
mm-hmm,
and ignore all the noise that other people were kind of shouting my way,
yeah,
I don't think I would have had the same sort of experience. Now,
yeah,
but the other problem was I was seen as a threat in my industry.
Sure.
So I felt like, and I noticed that other Atlanta lawyers were intentionally giving me bad advice to steer me off course.
Hmm.
And when I started realizing that, I'm like, damn, I can't really trust people.
Mm-hmm.
Then the world of masterminds opened up.
Yeah.
And maybe that's kind of what started happening was I started seeing other lawyers in other cities and states where, because we're in this mastermind together,
mm-hmm,
they're open to sharing their problems and their successes.
That's right.
But I never had like one individual coach. And I know it's going to sound very egoistic, but even in these masterminds,
yeah,
I'm still the one that they're all listening to when it comes to like digital marketing and social media and stuff. And it's like, I've just over the years started turning it into, I'm going to get my foot in the door because I have something you don't have.
Yeah.
But in exchange, teach me how to build an intake team.
Yeah.
In exchange, teach me what I'm missing on, you know, my case managers and paralegals and litigators and all this stuff. So,
sure. Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm the exception, but I would agree with you that most people should have coaches.
Well, I don't think you're the exception, right? I think, you're an outlier, right, in the industry, right? And not too many people are doing things the way that you're doing it, right? So like if you just went to, you know, a big TV advertiser, right, obviously they wouldn't be able to kind of tell you how to build a better social media campaign,
yeah,
right? So I get that, right? But what you could do is you can, you know, I'm sure there's people that inspire you. You probably read a lot of books, you probably listen to podcasts, right? How I found my coach was because I had seen a TED Talk about 10 years ago. And it was a TED Talk about raising kids to be entrepreneurs, right? Mm. And I'm like, wow, this really resonates with me, right? And he had all of these like little stories, right? He talks about like how he was in school. He was like a C student, couldn't pay attention, couldn't focus, right? He lived in Canada, and so he would go to class and he would take French, right? And he sucked at French, right? You know, but the school system said, well, we need to get him some tutors in French so that he can be better at French. But he's really good at public speaking, right?
Yeah.
Why don't they get the tutors to actually like embrace what he's good at instead of like doing, you know, try to embrace him and make him better at something that he sucks at, right? So while I'm watching this video, it like really resonated with me. And so I'm like, man, this guy is just so good. So he had like 4 books at the time. I bought him, I read him. You know, and then when I was qualified to work with him, right, because, you know, you have to do 5 million.
You have to have a certain size business,
revenue.
Yeah.
Then I reached out to him, and I wrote the most amazing email, like how I found him, you know, why I was inspired by him, why I think I'm very coachable, right? And I reached out to him, and he brought me on as one of his coaching students, I guess, right? So I tracked down my coach, right? And so I'm sure there's people that can inspire you. It doesn't have to be in the legal industry. It could be somebody that's doing big things in social media or whatever.
So I'll
else.
Tell you a story, okay, of what I did. I did exactly,
uh-huh,
what you're saying.
Yeah.
And by the way,
manifesting, this is manifestation.
For anyone that's listening or watching this show, I want to say this. If you're trying to pick a coach, it is important that you've developed an admiration,
mm-hmm,
and a respect level to that coach.
That's right.
Because you won't follow through on what they're offering,
mm-hmm,
or what they're telling you to do.
Yep.
And so the same way, I don't really read that many books. I want to, but
mm-hmm,
I don't know. I just
not
don't.
Time in the day, right?
Yeah. So I do listen to podcasts, and it's just easier for Audible, you know, audiobooks and podcasts. And so one of the mentors that I had was Andy Frisella. Okay. And so he's got the MFCEO project on, you know, his podcast. He's been doing it since 2016. He started this company from, like, you know, the basement, or, you know, from like a one bedroom apartment.
Yeah.
Started a supplement company, him and his partner sleeping on the couch, you know, with a picture of him and his bulldog in like 2006, you know, and has built it to over $1 billion a year in sales.
Sure.
And I listened to so many of these podcasts, and I remember one of his podcasts, he was talking about how his house was built by Ulysses S. Grant.
Wow.
The dude that's on the $50 bill.
Yeah.
And he's a huge Civil War and history buff and U.S. history buff. And I was like, man, like, I'm starting to learn so much about this person because he's got these unique passions. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily the same passions that I have, but I started having an admiration for his business acumen. And I thought, in order to get this person's attention, I need to give him something that has meaning outside of just money.
Yeah.
So first thing I did, the moment they opened up their mastermind, which they only did it for 2 years, I was in Spain at the time celebrating like our second year or first year anniversary with my wife.
Okay.
And I'm like, babe, I'm going to spend 70 grand on this mastermind.
There you go.
And she's like, that's insane. Like,
we could
do like 3 months of this trip with all the shopping we want. It's like, you want to do that? I'm like, yes, I've been listening to this guy for a really long time. I feel like I can learn what he has to say.
Okay.
And that's the point. The point is that I had built up so much of an admiration and respect level for this person. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, they're just human beings.
That's
like
it.
Most people are not going to look down at you, right?
No.
On their, you know, pedestal.
Nope.
But because I had built that admiration internally, I knew that whatever he said, like, I'm going to just soak it up like a sponge.
Sure.
And that sort of became a coach.
Yeah.
And what really happened was, so I paid for the coaching program. I went to his event, started going to the masterminds, networked with a lot of people.
That's the key.
And
the
value
networking
of all those networks, bro,
that's
like
the
people that I met in 2019, these are business people that have continued to grow all over the country.
That's right.
And so the $70,000 that I paid 4 or 5 years ago is paying dividends forever.
Your network is your network.
100%.
Right, yeah.
But then I made sure, I actually, and I would have paid $100,000 just for this opportunity. I asked him if I could come and tour his facility and spend a day with him.
Okay.
And he's like, sure, come on in.
Yeah.
And he's got one of the like most successful podcasts in the world.
Yeah.
So we spent a day in his massive facility.
Uh-huh.
Okay. He's got this huge custom gym that he built out with all of his exotic cars in the back that no one really sees, because that's a whole side of his life that's like he keeps for himself.
Yeah.
We did a couple of podcasts together in his podcast room, so I got to see how they built the podcast, and that influenced me to set up my own podcast.
Yep.
But here's something that I learned that I never would have learned had it not been for that same exact process.
Mm-hmm.
This facility is 250,000 square feet.
Okay.
Okay. And the office space aspect of it is about probably 100,000 square feet.
Okay.
More than half of the office space were blank tables and chairs. And so as we're doing the tour of this facility, I'm like, yo, Andy, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, that's the note writing station.
Okay.
Like, what do you mean? He's like, well, ever since the start of this company, we handwrite thank you notes to every single customer.
Hmm.
And even though we're doing over $1 billion a year in sales, we still take the time and we make sure every single employee has to be involved in their note writing, including the CEO, COO, everyone. It doesn't matter if you just do 5 notes a year, you have to be involved. That's something that they started from very, very early on.
Sure.
And it's not about the note writing. It's about the concept of outbound customer service.
Hmm.
Now, when we think about customer service, we think inbound.
Yeah.
Right? We think when a customer has a problem, they'll call us.
Yep.
What if you called the client proactively and instead started looking for problems, trying to solve those solutions, diagnose them. And if you are ahead of the ball every single time, you can get more Google reviews, you have a higher customer satisfaction rate, they end up listening to you, which ends up to, you know, higher value cases.
Yep.
And the chances of getting more referrals because of that skyrocket.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But you'll never get to that point if you don't physically and visually experience 60% of your entire warehouse is dedicated to outbound customer service. And this is a multi-billion dollar company.
Yeah.
So the power of believing that this is a mentor that I want to learn from allowed me to end up in that headquarters and create an entire outbound customer service part of my business, which has now made us, even though we're one of the youngest law firms in Georgia, we're top 10 on Google in terms of the amount of reviews because of that outbound customer service.
It made you see such a bigger vision of what life could be like, right? That's kind of, sometimes that all takes is just that inspiration, right? Going to see what other people are doing and being inspired and getting ideas and meeting somebody else, right? It's crazy how the universe works, right? It really is. It's like you meet this person that introduces you to this person. Like, I truly believe, like, this is my vision, like, you walk in, you sit down on first class, and you sit down next to somebody else. Like, you can sit there and be quiet the whole time and not say a word to them. Yeah. But there's a reason why the universe put you two together next to each other, and it's up to you to figure out why.
Yeah.
Like, I truly believe that, right?
Yeah, man. Hey, closed mouths don't get fed, man.
No. You got to take action. Like, you know, one of my, you know, the quotes that I live and die by is, you have the power to create a future that wasn't going to exist. You have a power to create a future that wasn't going to exist. All you got to do is take action, right?
Wow.
That's so powerful. Just take action, right? You know, me emailing the coach, right? You know, he wasn't expecting that email. It's just I manifested it and I emailed him. He brought me on. He made me, you know, he inspired me to write my first book. He inspired me to bring on a COO, right? So there's all this stuff, and it's just so powerful. But if I didn't send that email, right? If I didn't watch that TED Talk, if I didn't put all the dots together, it wouldn't have happened, right? So,
and there's, and if you're not at least consuming valuable information, whether it's podcasts, whether it's YouTube videos, books, audio books, whatever, then you'll never find that influential person that might have what you're looking for. So you definitely have to at least start by taking action on the pursuit of education.
Sure.
And then let that lead you to the ideal mentors. And then once an opportunity comes up, or you become the person that's like in their DMs all the time and looking for ways to connect with them.
Yeah.
But most of the time it's as simple as buying their most expensive product. And anytime an event comes up, you get in front of them.
Sure.
And that's it. Yeah. So I don't want to like forget about this, because this is the one question that I wanted to get at, and we're there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We have to do a different segment on hiring people.
Sure.
And never calling them a director from day one if they're not qualified to do it. Well, that's a different conversation.
It's a whole different.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because I had to go through that painfully.
Oh yeah.
But
we all did.
Complementary businesses.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
So you have this successful digital marketing agency, but you also realized in the legal space, you can buy up all these domains. And instead of just having a website and selling it, what most like average people do, you were like, how can I take my existing prowess of SEO, apply it to this secondary business of buying domains and skyrocket the value?
Yeah, and that again was an accident, right? So like what happened was, as I was doing SEO and I'm learning about, because like here I now I've got like legal clients, right? And I've never worked on law firm sites before, right? And so I don't want to experiment my strategies on their websites, right? Because SEO is a big experimentation. Like you do things, and when you're first getting started, you don't have, like right now, we've got hundreds of sites that we can look at and see what works and what doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
You know. But when you're first starting, you don't have that data, right? And so I needed to kind of experiment. And so I didn't want to experiment on my clients' websites. So therefore, I'm like, well, let me build this website, you know, and let me build these three other websites, and let me just do experimentation, right? And so the experimentation, you know, SEO is one of those things that, you know, a site's not just going to get a lot of traffic right away. If you literally, like, buy a domain from GoDaddy and you build a WordPress website on it and you publish content, you're probably not going to see your first call or lead for like 9 to like 12, 14 months.
And that's even with creating like a lot of words?
Yeah, that's even with creating a lot of words. You're not really going, like, and it, like if you're trying to compete for something like, I mean, if you're building a locksmith website, like maybe that's different, right? But I'm talking about like a personal injury lawyer website in a major market, right? Like, you're not going to see anything.
You're talking about organic search.
Yeah, and organic. It takes time.
I'm guessing the reason for that is because you're competing against 20 years of content on people that have had these websites forever.
Yep. And the good thing is that a lot of people were not SEO savvy from the beginning. And so there's some of the biggest TV advertisers, their websites still suck, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like just kind of ignored it because TV was feeding their thing, right? Now they're starting to figure it out. But anyway, so like I'm experimenting with these websites, you know, come month 7, month 8, month 9, it's like, whoa, we're like on the first page of Google for like Dallas car accident lawyer. Like, yeah. Holy shit, like with this experimental website, right? So we're like, okay, now what do we got to do to get it to be top 3, right? And we, you know, I keep doing things and testing things and links and this and that. And next thing you know, like all of a sudden the phone starts to ring and it's going to my cell phone, right? And somebody calls up like, hey, I was in a car accident. I'm like, okay. You know, so I'm like, well, what do I do with this now, right? And so, you know, I'm like, well, maybe I could, you know, sell the leads. And so I looked into that and that wasn't really profitable because it wasn't generating that many leads.
Yeah.
So, you know, anyway, I used it as leverage to maybe reach out to other lawyers so that, hey, listen, I've got this website, it's ranking, but if you want, I could do your SEO on your website. And you know, I started doing like using it as like relationship building. Then eventually started to rank really well and so we were leasing it out, you know. You can lease out a site like that for like $10,000-$15,000 a month.
Wow.
In some markets, right? And so and it's mostly profit, you know. There's not a lot you have to do to it after that point. So we started building more of those. And so we have some of those in our portfolio. In not just personal injury and DUI and other verticals as well. And so those became assets. And so that's one thing. And, you know, now we've built another website called Esquire X, which is kind of it's like a site that's more of like a freelance marketplace, like an Upwork, if you will, for the legal industry.
Yeah, kind of like a legal staffing.
Yeah. So I've got that, you know. So I've made some good investments. Like everybody else, I've made some bad investments. I've lost money on some deals, right? But you live and you learn. But overall, you know, and so many opportunities, you know, come across my desk, like just like you, right? You know, and so you have to be very selective.
And that's what I wanted to get at was like, so you have the SEO business. And then so like over the years under this sort of Hennessy Digital ecosystem or umbrella, if you will, what are some of the other complementary businesses that you've discovered? And the reason I'm asking you this is because there are people that are at a career point or at a trajectory where maybe it doesn't make sense to reinvest 100% of their revenue back into their business, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, maybe it's a good idea to kind of like start some sort of secondary business or a side hustle, you know, in air quotes.
Yeah.
But if it's a complementary business and it's related to the existing business, you can kind of support both of them.
Yeah.
So what are some of the other complementary businesses that you've done over the years that you can kind of like shed some light on?
Yeah. So I've had many, you know, back in like 2009, I had a big agency that was doing just link building, right? And that's where I had, you know, 70 virtual assistants, right?
Wow.
That were basically doing that. And that's where the high volume links were working, right? And, you know, nowadays, those type of links will get a website penalized, right? But back in the day, that's what worked, right? You know, and so then later on, you have to kind of go in and disavow it, right? But that was one complementary business that I had back in the day. You know, nowadays, like, believe it or not, like, we are trying to stay focused because there's so much growth opportunity with just the Hennessy Digital. Like, we've built up a pretty good reputation, a good brand. You know, we're not for everyone. We're more of the, you know, the an expensive, I guess, company, if you will, just because we compete in some of the most competitive markets. And, you know, and if a $5,000 per month budget is just not going to be effective for a campaign, I'm not going to just take somebody's money. I've got a lot of pride in my character. I like to show up to these conferences and not have to hide behind walls because I screwed people over. Like, that's how my industry is set up. Like, it truly is. People, like, come in and they take advantage of people, and they don't show up to these conferences anymore, right? And I've been coming to these conferences since 2008, and I still have a pretty good reputation, and it's because I don't screw people over. You know, I'm not perfect. And so my point is that, you know, I've got a COO, his name is Scott, much smarter than me. He went to MIT, got a Kellogg MBA, went on Jeopardy, won the game, right? Like, literally super smart, right? And so
I'm gonna put that in my next, like,
yes,
career post. Like,
that's
must
the point
win
of
Jeopardy.
Like finding that person that's not for hire to be an essential part of your business, right? And so I've got a great CFO, right? Anyway, so Scott, he's my no man, basically, right? So opportunities come in all day long, right? And it's not just like new businesses. Like, there's a lot of that, right? Hey, I've got this website. Would you like to partner with me on it? Hey, I want to do this, right? And so we're very selective. And so things do come in that we accept, right? So like, now that you can own a law firm in Arizona and we can actually have an equity interest in that, we've got some sites that's a part of our business. So like, for example, we're partners on a site called birthinjurylawyer.com, right? Which ranks nationally for birth injury and cerebral palsy attorney and lawyer and things like that. And so those are, you know, big cases. And so we take our core competency of being able to rank a website for competitive terms and we get it to rank, and then those turn into revenue, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's equity.
It is.
You're getting equity in your knowledge. So it's really a variation of, instead of just selling your services for 50 grand a month, it's like, you know what, maybe for a birth injury lawyer, it might not make sense for you to pay 50 grand a month. You don't want to put 600K a year into this SEO, but you'll gladly give me a third referral fee on a $20 million case.
Yes.
I'll take that all day.
Yeah.
I'll take one third referral fee for 200, please.
So we've got a couple of those sites that are kind of planted, right? And you know, and it's just, it's great, you know? And so now we're just kind of like laser focused. And now what I'm doing is I'm optimizing my time now. Because my whole schedule was dictated by my travel or Zoom calls. Like I used to have Zoom calls. It was like an hour block to do this one-on-one call and an hour block to do this one-on-one call, right? When all I needed was 15 minutes. But if you schedule an hour, you're going to stay on the call for an hour, right?
Yeah, I'm getting better at that. You can actually do 8-minute calls.
See?
And as long as you're punctual and you're on top of it, because sometimes you just show up 8 minutes late.
Yep.
Right? That's a problem.
Yeah.
But if you schedule an 8-minute call and you're punctual, you can get a lot more done.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I became, you know, the old saying, right? You take a shower and your best ideas come from the shower, right? Yeah. And it's just because you're allowing your brain to just stop. It's like when you wash dishes, right? You're not thinking of anything, right? And like, but when you're in the shower, you're just like, your mind is so clear, right? That some amazing ideas come from it, right? And so I wrote an article for, I think it was Forbes, about taking an 8-hour shower, right? Like, just completely block off like one full day for you to just be creative, right? This way nobody's dictating your schedule and putting stuff in. It's just,
I go on walks.
Do you?
Yeah. So I used to, and honestly, a lot of times I go on walks, I call people. I call smart people just to bounce ideas off of them.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is normal. But I flesh out my business plan and idea, and it gets better and better every time I explain it to someone new.
Okay.
And so if I have a new business idea, I run it by at least 50 people.
Sure.
By the version 1 versus version 50 is very, very different. Mm-hmm. But it becomes so fine-tuned because your pitch almost gets perfected because you've kind of gone through all of those sort of, you know, objections over all those different phone calls. But
sure.
I like to just go on walks. Sometimes I'll go up a hill or something and it kind of gives me some clarity.
Everybody's got their own way, right?
Yeah.
To clear, like, you know, a good thing to you know, if you start to get stressed out, to get de-stressed, is you find out, like, what was it when you were a kid that you had no stress in the world, right? And so for me, it was at the baseball field. I was a kid, I played baseball, and right, I used to look forward to going to baseball, right? And so if I ever want to get de-stressed, right, I go back to that environment, right? So I'll go walk my dog or take my kids, you know, and hang out and play on the monkey bars or whatever while, like, the baseball game's going on. And that just allows me to kind of decompress or de-stress, just because I'm in an environment and an atmosphere where that's, because as you're growing up, you know, once you hit 12 years old, like, you're molded for the most part, right? I mean, that's kind of how it works. So that's pretty important. So right now my whole schedule is I've got Tuesday and Wednesday completely blocked. So I made it, instead of an 8-hour shower, I got a 2 8-hour showers, and it's just been amazing. You know, and it allows just me to kind of be
you're
a little bit more creative.
You're not actually talking about actually showering for 8 hours.
No, right? Not.
You're just an 8-hour, like, time block.
The 8 hours, basically.
Yeah,
it's just a
you.
Time to be focused, right?
Okay.
And where there's nothing else happening, right? And so.
So I did want to ask you one last question, because I know we've taken a lot of your time, and
this
I know it's
great.
Valuable.
No, this
okay.
is good.
Okay, so you mentioned COO.
Yes.
Okay. And you mentioned he's a very smart guy, MIT grad, Harvard, Kellogg, you know, the Fruit Loops, the works. to grow your business,
uh-huh.
How important is it to hire people smarter than you?
Oh.
And do you think this is probably why a lot of people can't grow their businesses? Because they have to be the smartest.
Yeah. You have to be completely vulnerable as a CEO, right? Because if you're just trying to fake it and that you're the smartest person in every area of the business, you're never going to grow, right? You know, you have to accept that you have a zone of genius, right? And other people have different zones of genius, yeah. right? And you have to attract people to fulfill those voids in your business where that's their zone of genius, right? So finance and accounting is not my zone of genius, right?
Same.
I had to do it, right? I did it in a very bad way, unorganized. If I would have got audited by the IRS, I'd probably be in jail. I don't know, right? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I didn't know what I was doing, right? You know, but, you know, you bring in a good CFO, and they're going to basically get all your books in order and this and that. And, like, so you can pull up reports and understand, like, when you have to, like, you know, how to grow, how, like, if you have to lay people off, like, to basically save the business, right? And there's all these different parts, like, from operations and client services, and, you know, you just kind of, there's so much, right? And the biggest thing for my COO is, like I said, he's my no person, right? Because all these opportunities come in, and as an entrepreneur, you're just like, sometimes you get bored, and you want to go off to do the next thing, right? You just want these, like, you know, squirrel, right? Yeah. That's kind of how most CEOs is. They're, you know, they're like that. So all these opportunities comes in, and it's like, no. Okay, this one seems good. Let's look at this one, right? Because otherwise, you have so many different distractions, and that prohibits you from really growing, right? Because there's only so much time in the day, and if you're focused on seven different things, right? You know, like.
It's easier to have seven smart people that are running those things for you, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. I've started to notice that amongst law firm owners
mm-hmm.
is that the reason a lot of law firms don't scale is because the lawyer thinks they have to be the smartest person.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're limited by your litigation prowess because you'll never hire someone that you can see as a threat or is a better litigator or a better pre-litigation attorney or a better case manager or whatever, because you want to hold the keys to the castle.
Yeah.
And so I've definitely seen firms where the lawyer who's the CEO is also training all of the other litigation attorneys and all the other trial attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you do realize that you're the bottleneck because if you're the captain and you're like the highest level of knowledge in that entire business, you're not even allowing the possibility of someone getting better
mm-hmm.
because they all have to kind of funnel up to you.
Yeah.
And so there's a couple of ways to do this. One is you recruited. So you found some of the top talent and you're like, I don't care how much we need to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to bring these people in because we need them.
Yep.
What I've started doing is that because I have so many different tasks as a CEO, and one part that's been really hard for me has been like the content creation, delegating that over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were talking earlier, before we started the show, I used to be so heavily involved on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Like I was
consuming your life.
It was everything, yep. right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I just started hiring more people and giving them different content like packages to work on and say, yep. look, you got YouTube, you got TikTok, you got your Instagram reels, you got Facebook. Let's establish some KPIs. It doesn't have to be anything crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something as simple as, hey, we want to average 10,000 views per video, or we want to create 10 different videos with an average growth rate of 5% more followers per week or whatever. And this is what we're keeping track of.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And what's happened is, first, I teach you the foundation and the fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
And then I let you go and get as much additional training as you need to empower you to become better.
That's great. Yep.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so you can still do it like very cheaply.
Yeah.
But then the mistake that a lot of lawyers make and business owners make is that they forget that the person they initially hired at an entry level salary after a couple of years is no longer entry level.
Sure.
And you treat them like entry level because, well, I trained you and I fed you and I pro.
No.
Yeah, yeah, you definitely got them there, but you also benefited from them the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like kind of that catch-22 where either you pay for them now or you pay for them later. You know what I mean?
Because then you got to bring somebody else in and train them again.
Exactly.
And it's just starting over again, right?
Yeah.
You know, and And there, sure, there is a chance that they take the knowledge and the insights and they go off and do their own thing, right? I mean, like, but it's much better to invest in your people and hope that they'll stay rather than not investing in them, right? You know, so it's exactly. It is powerful. But yeah, there's so many mistakes that lawyers make. You know, I mean, you know, a lot of lawyers aren't like business people, right? Yeah. So they've got to learn that aspect of it, you know.
They take insurance adjusters personally.
Oh, yeah.
Like an adjuster would be like, oh, I'm only going to pay you this much on the case. Or, oh, screw you. I'm going to file a lawsuit. And I'm going to subpoena you.
Yeah.
I'm going to depose you. Like, dude.
It's a waste of their time.
Why are you taking it personally? Just drop your fee by $1,200 uh-huh. and the client will be happy.
That's
you
know? Right. Like, and then like even things like, you know, like they get a big case and they start marketing and then they scale. Like those are the people that really succeed is those that kind of go all in, right?
Yeah.
And they're just like, hey, I'll keep a chip and I'm going to put the other 49 in, right? In hopes to kind of grow. Like John Morgan's story,
I haven't had
thing,
that like
right?
big case yet.
No,
like,
right?
I haven't
come.
Had that massive windfall.
It's going to come.
But I'll tell you this, man. I love the fact that I did it the hard way.
Yeah.
Because like my average case value is in the low five figures,
mm-hmm.
but I've mastered those cases.
Good.
Like I'm so good at those policy limits cases, the 25s, 50s, and 100s.
Yeah.
We settle those literally every single day. And we know how to maximize those cases. We've gotten really, really good at it. And
yeah.
so it's allowed us to fuel and build a litigation team, a workers' comp team, mm-hmm. a national sort of social media campaign.
Sure.
Yeah. But I'm definitely all in that regard, and I'm still waiting on
you'll
those
get,
big ones to
settle.
You'll
get lucky here once in a
yeah,
while, right?
You know,
it's just the game, right? Game of numbers, right?
Yeah.
And then a lot of mistakes they make, too, is like then these lawyers start to get more volume, and the advertising starts to work. And then what happens is they create intake problems then, right? And then that's a, like, there's always a constraint in your business,
yeah.
right? And you always have to, like, look at, like, what is the biggest constraint and how do I fix that? So I fixed the marketing constraint. Now we got all these people, like, coming to us as leads, but we're not getting back to the leads. There's too many leads and we don't have enough intake people or intake people aren't asking the right questions, you know? You know, the other tip I wanted to give too while we're here, this is just a tip, because we talked about Google reviews and things like that. You know, I think lawyers miss the boat when they wait till the end to get a review. So like that's what people think. It's like, hey, you know, when they come in and we give them a check and they're happy and we ask them to leave a review. You know, just have your intake people ask for a review based on the initial phone call. Say, hey, by the way, did I answer all of your questions? Are you happy that you're going to be going with us? Blah, blah, blah. If you don't mind, please leave us a review. I'm going to send you a link following up, right?
I have a specific, like, strategy for that, too.
Do you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the script is basically this. After you've completed the call and you feel like it went well,
yeah.
you ask the client, hey, can you do me a favor?
Uh-huh.
Could you please leave me a Google review and mention my name?
Yeah.
I'm really trying to impress my boss, and I want to show him that I'm doing a good job with customer service.
There
that
you
would,
go.
That would really mean a lot to me.
Yep. And then so, you have got an incentive program every
right,
time somebody
exactly.
leaves a review.
Right, so, exactly. So, uh-huh. so they mention the name
yep.
in the Google review, so it's easy to see who actually got that review.
Yeah.
And clients, if you've given them value and actually helped them during yeah. that phone conversation,
uh-huh.
it's not that they feel indebted to you, but there is sort of a little bit of a guilt if, like, the person on the other end who's just helped you for the past 15, 20 minutes
yeah.
is asking for a favor.
Oh, yeah.
Like, hey, it'll just take you 30 seconds. I'll text you the link.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
I mean, if you get an amazing waiter the first time you're at a restaurant, right, and it's just like you can tell. Like, my kids, like, were trained to tell good service versus bad service, right? And you reward good service, right? You leave a 30% tip, right, on the tab, right? But that's the same thing. It's like you want to have amazing customer service so that you're getting the reviews earlier on, and then your numbers are just growing. But I like with that strategy.
So last question
yes.
before I let you go.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What question do you wish I would have asked you during this podcast?
I would say some, how could Jason Hennessy be a good father? That would have been a good one. Just talking about like, because that's also, I think I've got a lot of lessons there that I've learned.
Yeah, I
over
see
the
amount of, like, almost daily there's posts with your sons, and I
oh,
know
yeah.
they're going to college now, and
yeah.
you got a daughter too.
I've got a daughter too.
And I noticed, like, You've got all these stories about how, you know, you were an Atlanta boy and then you moved to LA and
that's
now
right.
Your kids are all about LA and
yeah.
One of them's planning on going to Kansas University.
Yeah, they're
right?
Well, looking at that, we're touring. So we toured Kansas, we're touring Oregon, Arizona State.
I'm a new father and I got one on the way. So
So
what advice would you give me?
So two things. So this is a lesson that I learned. My daughter and my wife went to, she was like 4 years old at the time. And they went to a birthday party.
Okay.
And so I'm like, okay, great. They're at the birthday party. I'm going to stick around and catch up on some emails and stuff like that. It's like a Saturday morning. So I'm sitting there and I'm typing things up. And then all of a sudden, like a couple hours later, my daughter comes running in my office, right? Daddy, 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 look, slime. And I'm like, and I'm looking at her and she shows me this slime, right? And she's like, look, daddy, look, I made it. I got to put the gems in it and everything. And I'm like, oh my, and I'm paying attention to work. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so awesome. You know, that's really good. Good job, Brooklyn, right? And I'm going back to my email, right? So what happened was, like, I missed it, right? Like, she had a big deal in her life. Like, this slime was just like a big deal to her, right? But I didn't make it a big deal for me. Right. And so I think the lesson there. So now I keep slime on my desk.
Yeah.
Right. And it reminds me that anytime somebody has a big deal, you need to make it your big deal. Right.
Yeah. Wow.
And that's for kids, our, you know, significant others, parents. Right. So try to make some. And the other thing, too, is find out
downplay other people's big moments.
No, like don't.
Because
like,
it's their big moment.
I understand
not
that you're focused on email and stuff like that, but this is a big deal. I need to pay attention, and I need to make this a big deal, right? So that's one lesson. I'll give you three. The second is find out what your kids are passionate about and make that your passion, right? So, like, for example, my son started to like hockey, and he got really into the New York Rangers, right? I was never like a diehard New York Ranger fan or was never a real big hockey fan, but you know, now I am, right? And we go to games together and it's like we're high-fiving, right? And it's like, you know, you have a better connection with your kids when you can find out what their passions are and then you make that your passion. And I think later on, like you find out as your parents get older, you find out what are their interests and you need to make that. So you have connection with people, right? And then the third that I'll leave you with is this happened when I went to my grandfather's funeral, right? And so you go to a funeral and you know how that works, right? You know, they got the casket and this is the end, right? You've got photos on the wall, right? You've got videos playing of like memories and stuff.
Yeah.
People get up there and they say nice things about how great this person was and they share stories and memories, right? And so as I'm sitting there, I'm like, wow, is this really like what the end looks like, right? Doesn't matter how much money I had in the bank or anything like that. You're in the casket, it's over, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is I had a glimpse, right? And the glimpse was that you, now living, have the power to basically create all of the stories and the photos and the memories that are going to go up on the wall and in the videos.
Wow.
You have that power now, right? And so that was my glimpse. And so ever since then, I try to live my life to basically be more in control of what will be at my funeral, right?
Yeah, and it's not about gathering things and making a lot of money and accumulating wealth.
That's part of it. Nobody's going to remember it.
Yeah, it's about creating memories with your loved ones because
that's right.
Those are the people that are going to be at the eulogy, at the funeral.
Yep, the stories, the memories, the photos, the videos. You have the power to create those, like the trip to Hawaii or this or that.
Yeah,
right?
Man, you know, like those are fantastic points, man. And honestly, like when I started my company, like I worked so much, an obnoxious amount, and I still work a lot now, but I definitely prioritize other things in my life over work.
Yeah.
Not always, but I try to.
Yeah.
Faith is one of them.
Sure.
Spouse.
Yeah.
Kid. But I always used to say, I'm just buying time for the future, you know?
Future it's may like, never come.
I'm just investing all this, you know, time and energy into my business because I want this, you know, extra revenue so that I can afford to say, look, I'm gonna take the weekend off with my kid. Well, now it's time to pay that debt.
That's right.
You know, and so if God gave you the blessing and the opportunity to live through that financial success,
yeah,
and this is honestly, I don't think I've ever publicly said this, but I'll say it now. Mm-hmm. It's honestly why I don't feel like doing a summit this year in 2023. I'm expecting another kid later this year, and I want to be with my wife and kid.
Sure.
You know, and, yeah. and the second baby, like I don't want to miss that. You mm-hmm. know, like I want to be there and help, and I want to be involved with that. And there's a lot of stress with putting together an event.
Oh,
and
it totally is. Yeah.
I feel like that's just those memories and that time is something that you'll never get back. And who knows? It might even turn into a positive where people are like, oh, dude, we missed it so much. Like, we didn't believe you're going to do one in 2024.
Yeah, see?
So we're going to. But that's great advice, man. And I'm happy you mentioned that because mm-hmm. I'm sure a lot of people look at you as an authority figure, as a digital marketing expert, when it's like, you know what? I'm more proud of being a good dad.
That's it. Yeah.
That's awesome, bro.
Powerful stuff. So.
Jason, thank you so much
this
for joining.
Awesome,
I had a good time, bro.
I did too.
Thank you, man.
A good conversation.
Thank you.
And I hope people get value from it.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you for joining us on the CEO Lawyer Podcast today. Jason Hennessy with Hennessy Digital. If you don't know, now you know. We'll see y'all on the next one.
Thank you.